Welcome to this episode of the NLN podcast, Nursing Edge Unscripted, The Surface Track, and thank you for joining us. This episode is entitled Getting the Pulse on Practice, Connecting Clinical to the Classroom. And to help us today, we have a very special guest, Kate Boss. Kate Boss is a senior clinical nurse one at the University of Maryland Medical Center's R. Adams Crawley Shock Trauma Center on the acute care floor, also known as 4STA. Kate specializes in precepting new graduate nurses to the clinical nurse role. Kate continues to mentor new team members as they advance through the professional advancement model. Kate also acts as a resource to implement clinical evidence-based practice initiatives that ensure the unit is continuing to address practice gaps. Rachel and I especially want to welcome Kate to celebrate our own special mentorship relationships with her. Kate began her professional nursing career path as Rachel's student in the Clinical Nurse Leader Program at University of Maryland School of Nursing. Rachel continues to mentor Kate in various aspects of her professional development. I had the fortunate opportunity to be mentored by Kate when I began teaching clinical to medical surgical students on her clinical unit. Kate served as a welcoming and informative mentor to me as I had to work to familiarize myself with the unit policies, culture, and patient care community.
Welcome, Kate. Thank you for joining us.
Anytime. I'm excited. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here, Kate. To get us started, how about you share a little bit about where you are at University of Maryland Medical Center, what you do, and a little bit about how your role intersects with education?
Yeah, so I'm at in Maryland at the University of Maryland Medical Center at the Shock Trauma Center there. And I work on their acute care floor. And I've been a clinical nurse there on and off for about 7 years now, which seems crazy, but it kind of flew by. And, throughout my role, I'm a senior clinical nurse one, just as our advancement model there. And, but my focus with that is more education based, instead of like more admin stuff. And I focus more on precepting new graduate nurses, and working with some of the students with instructors as well, helping to coordinate their calendar and, things like that. So it's kind of how I intersect with education and the academia world. So,
I'll just share, Kate, that I have vivid memories of taking students to 4STA, right? The shock trauma acute care unit. And you were always this breath of fresh air. I would see you like, oh, thank goodness Kate's here, because I felt like as an instructor, I was in good hands with you there, because I felt like you understood the role of the nurse. You understood, or the students really. You also, I felt like, understood my role, and I felt like you were always ready to give a hand or help me navigate the unit and provide the resources I needed to provide good clinical teaching. Sometimes that does, and I say that because I shouldn't take it for granted, because that's not how every unit, and certainly not how every nurse receives clinical education. Sometimes there's a disconnect between what the unit, either the unit nurses or the unit culture sort of expects of instructors and students. And sometimes it takes a lot for the instructor to try to navigate that and make this, help the students have a good experience and help the nurses understand, we can help and we are here to help and to provide patient care, but there's really going to be a balance between balancing the learning and the work. I never had to really do that with you, because you were just so, I felt like you had a very good and clear understanding of what the roles are. And that was very helpful to me.
Oh, thank you. That's nice to hear. I at one point after I graduated nursing school and started my years as a nurse, I started doing clinical education as well and was a clinical instructor. And I do remember that feeling of going onto a unit where, you've never been there. You don't know the staff. It's not your patient population. And you just kind of feel anxious, and you're like, how can I teach these students? Like, how can I you know, I don't even know where the chucks are. I don't even know where, you know, the supplies are. Do they use chucks? Are we allowed to do that? Like, do they use bed pits? Can I get the patient out of bed? And so I remember feeling all of those like fears and thinking like, oh, maybe I'm failing these students because I don't know the unit and the culture. And so I think I just kind of take that with me as a clinical nurse and knowing that these instructors are coming in and they're just like the rest of us and just want to, you know, provide, make good nurses. So I think that's kind of what I do.
You know, Kate, I'm glad you brought up about this transition to being a clinical instructor. Because I remember us having conversations early on, right, when you were thinking about and starting to transition. And I think it might be really helpful to hear your perspective on what that experience was like and how faculty, full-time faculty who support clinical instructors, how they can help support them and make that transition easier, because it is not an easy one. You've alluded to just some of just the logistical aspects, but there's a ton more to transitioning into that role. So I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on what that transition was like for you and how in academia can we make it better for our clinical faculty who take on these clinical instructor roles?
You mean when you and Dr. Davenport convinced me to finally do it?
Yes.
Yeah. I was going to say convinced or like forced, because I could see that happening too.
It may have been some very persuasive conversations. I'll tell you that.
There was some Jedi mind tricks in there for sure. I think they knew it was something that I was interested in and I wanted to do. So it wasn't, I don't think that they had to pull my arm too hard from what I remember. And I really enjoyed it when I was doing it and hope to one day go back to it a little bit more full time. Because I do think that that is something that helps bridge the gap between clinical practice and education as a strong clinical instructor, somebody that can kind of help you see what you're learning in the classroom and, you know, put it into practice. How can faculty help do that is, I think exactly what you did, just support you, show you that you do know more than you think. I was relatively a new grad and, you know, but you're like, no, you know what you're doing. And just continuing to give me this confidence that I did not think I had. And then going into that first day, you're like, oh gosh, are they going to know that I don't know what I'm doing? And there's something you taught me. You were like, you don't have to know everything. You just have to say, that's a great question. I'll get back to you. And you do. And then you go back. And as long as you get back to them, they're going to understand that that's what, because you can't ever know everything in nursing. It's impossible. And so just continuing to, you know, find the students that promote education and want to progress the field of nursing and, you know, kind of target them and work with them. And I think you guys got me into the guided study sessions while I was a student and into that tutoring role and into the education world a little bit earlier. And so it was kind of ingrained that I was going to start to do education stuff once I kind of got my feet wet in nursing.
That's, you know, you're saying something really important, Kate, which is, in my mind, you got into an education track early. You were still a student and you were invited and encouraged to take on that educator role within your student capacity. And I think with tutoring and meant like peer support. And I think that's so important because I think right now nursing education is maybe already in or heading for a pretty big crisis with regard to recruiting new nurse educators and retaining new nurse educators in the field. It's not always been known, I don't think, as a really something that I think nurses want to do. And I think we need to create a narrative that helps people understand that this is a way to give to the profession and to inform the next generation of nurses. And it's a way to impact patient care. So I think that early step is really important that you just identified. And I don't see that happening a whole lot. I mean, do you, Rachel?
No, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking what's running for me is this is really speaking to the importance of just getting to know your students, right? So I was really fortunate. I knew Kate well as a student when she was a student and other students. And I think about how there's students out there that we may not know really well, and we don't know their strengths and be able to connect them in the tracks that really help develop them. And I think that that this is going to be really important in thinking about how do we mentor the next generation of educators, whether they're on the side of academics or on the side of clinical practice. There's mentoring that can start before early on. And I think that that can help shape. I know that was done for me. I have a mentor who I attribute being in education because that mentor reached out before I even saw myself as ready. And she saw me as ready and she believed in me and she helped kind of sort of take me under her wing and gave me that support when I was really in the thick of imposter syndrome, which is, Kate, kind of what you're alluding to, you know, like, what are they going to figure out? I don't know what I'm doing. We need to be doing more of that in education and on the side of academia, you know, academic-based education and clinical practice-based education, I think.
And how, you know, I think what I came up against is, you know, where you and I both taught, Rachel, in a larger school of nursing, our classes were huge. And so I think it was hard. I think a lot of people can be up against that challenge, number one, because of just sheer volume. The other thing I think could challenge faculty is just knowing that they can initiate this question of like, what is your 2-year plan, 3-year plan, 5-year plan? Like, sure, your butt's in the seat right now. You're a student, but what do you want to do in a few years time? And helping them to look ahead a little bit. I've never even done that really intentionally on one-on-one conversations, but how many one-on-one conversations are you having in a class of 100? You know, you may not get to see all 100 students.
Yeah. And I want to pull you and Kate on this to hear your perspective as both a former student and someone who works with students a lot now. You know, I was just at a conference talking about vulnerability of learning and psychological safety and talking about how do we help, you know, what are the small things we do in the moment that help really shore up the psychologically safe container and address vulnerability and learning. And we had this conversation about, you know, how often are we getting to class early and before we stand at the front of the room and wait for the clock to tick, 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 so we can start and everyone's in the seats. How often do we mingle around the classroom and just have a conversation and greet our learners and have small talk and just have a sentence or two to get to know them as a person? And I think back on my last, you know, 14, almost 15 years in education now, and the times I really got to learn and know my students were actually in those bigger classes, or even, you know, in that cohort with Kate, with you, I think we had like 50 some students, was getting to know them in those small moments before class started, or as we're leaving the room, or when they come to my office, or, you know, those small acts, I think, can really go a long way in getting to know our students, figuring out what their strengths are. And even if we don't have the resources to help mentor them, connecting them with the people who do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's a great point, Rachel.
Yeah, Kate. I'm just thinking, I remember, I mean, our program was, in my opinion, kind of, I mean, it was small compared to other, like, I came from my undergrad was a tiny school. So to me, it was a huge class. But now looking at like the bigger perspective, like our 50 person class was tiny. You know, some of my classes in undergrad were 8 students. And so coming into a classroom with 50, I was like, I don't want to talk. My mom asked me the first day, did you make any friends? And I was like, I didn't speak to anybody. And so it wasn't until, you know, after a few weeks, you know, getting more comfortable. No, and then you guys, I feel like, really encouraged us to try all of the guided study sessions. So we had cohorts ahead of us that were tutoring us and mentoring us and giving us their experience, and having some of the, you know, previous graduates come back and teach as a clinical instructor. You really got to see, you could see yourself in that role, or, you know, like, okay, I can do this. I can, like, you know, I know what I'm doing. Especially in a time when you're, you know, struggling and you're trying to figure out how to learn all of this information. And so to me, like having this, not necessarily like a faculty mentor or anything like that, but just a peer mentor where you're somebody that's, doesn't even have to be older, but just somebody that's in a more experienced position than you that can help guide you to figuring out, you know, what it is that you want to do with your degree. Because there's so many options with nursing. It's overwhelming to think about when you graduate, because everybody just thinks it's clinical, like a clinical bedside nurse, but there's so many more options that people can do that I don't think that we really get into in the classroom at all. It's more just focused on clinical and, but there's so many other things that we could do too.
And I think, you know, by knowing what those options are, I think that would be yet another way to get to know your learners. Because if you, because I've often thought, like when I've had these office conversations with learners that are maybe struggling, because honestly, that's often what generates an office visit, right? With your faculty, is that there's like some struggle. So I would get to I would talk with them and learn about them, that they have this like special contribution into nursing. And you can only get that by having these conversations. And not everybody is cut out for being a rock star ICU, you know, nurse in a big medical center, right? There's, like you mentioned, hospice, and there's community opportunities. There's even like really community outreach services. There's so much out there, and our learners don't know. But unless you have this conversation with somebody and you can unpack what their interest areas are and, you know, where they can really shine, and then you can offer that, hold them up, you know, instead of just, because they usually walk in the office feeling discouraged, deflated, and like, I can't be a nurse because I can't pass this test. Yeah. But that's not true. That's not true. There's a place for you, you know?
There's a couple points I wanted to say. I think that our, you know, in our clinical field, and I definitely felt it in nursing school, is where when you graduate, you need to be an ICU nurse. You need to be the top of the top. And that's apparently the top of the top. And I remember getting my practicum placement and I was devastated because it wasn't the ICU. And that's what I'd wanted. I'd been a student nurse there. I had, you know, that was my track. And I remember probably crying to Rachel. And she's like, it's fine. You're going to learn so much. You're going to see so much. And I was just like, okay. And 7 years later, I'm still on that unit. I've tried to quit a couple times and I keep coming back. So there's something about it. And I think just knowing, you know, that it's not always just that ICU role. It's that, you know, you can be a rock star in a med-surg floor, and that's great and good enough. And that's okay, because that's nursing too. And the community nurse, like, that's nursing too.
I just want to go on record as an ED trauma nurse saying I have so much respect for med surg nurses who have, you know, a patient load of 5-6 plus. The time management, it's an entirely different skill set. The ability to communicate and to delegate, and it's just something that is extraordinary. And so I think you're hitting on something really important, which is, and we're going down a different rabbit hole right now, and I think that's fine. It's, you know, what are the messages we're sending our students in nursing programs, right? So just like you said, Kate, like, you know, getting this feeling of, oh, you know, to be the best nurse, you have to be an ICU nurse, or, you know, if you're X, Y, or Z, it has some sort of connotation. What are the inherent messages we're sending our learners? Because, you know, as the healthcare landscape is drastically changing, and where nurses are working and the types of roles that they're holding is changing, we really need to break those stereotypes and those connotations and make sure we're sending a different message to our students in nursing programs so that they don't walk away feeling like that, because that is going to exacerbate the problem we have now at the bedside.
Yeah. I remember during the pandemic, there was this big pull for, we need more nurses. We need more nurses. And people were coming in and saying like, oh, I can do ICU. And it's like, really, we just need people after they leave the hospital, like in a convalescent place. Like, we need more med surg, basically, for all intents and purposes, nurses. And, you know, there wasn't enough of them. There wasn't enough people that could do that skill set, or were willing to do that skill set. But everybody was like, no, I can work in the biocontainment unit. But when it came to doing, you know, something else elsewhere, it was like, oh no, I can't do that. Or, you know, I don't have that skill set. So I think that that's pretty important.
And, you know, Kate, I was wondering, this is really helpful hearing this. I was wondering if you can expand a little bit on that, just around, you know, a lot of nurse educators, a lot of times you start and you're in practice and then you want to make a transition into education. Mm-hmm. And for a while you end up doing both, you know, you can stay in practice and teach. At some point though, educators, including myself, end up leaning more on the education heavy side and start really stepping away from practice and sometimes completely. Mm-hmm. And for some time, amount of time, that can really create a deficit in our knowledge and our ability to kind of keep our finger on the pulse, per se, of what's happening in clinical, especially if you're not clinical teaching anymore. And I was just wondering if you could share, in case there are any of our listeners out there, or viewers, you know, how has practice, even on your one unit that you've worked on, you know, how did it change pre-pandemic, during the pandemic, and now as we're entering this sort of post-pandemic phase, you know, what are some of the changes you're seeing in clinical practice? What are the emphasis?
That's a really good question. And I think, to me, there's always been some sort of gap between the academia world and the clinical practice world for the same reasons that you just said. And it's to no fault, because you can't do both forever. It's exhausting. I was doing clinical education and working and trying to be a human, and it was just too much. So I was like, one has to give. And so,
not the human one, right?
That's what I was hoping. Yeah.
And, you know, wanting to have, you know, a life and, you know, get married and have all of those wonderful things that come with that. So, you know, I think I chose right for now, which is, you know, a really good feeling. But I think that in school, you learn about a disease or you learn about an issue, or and in this perfect academia hospital, you give the treatment, you give the medication, you do the surgical intervention, and the patient's fixed. They're discharged. It's a nice, pretty package, and you move on. Where in the real world, you have compliance issues. You have all these comorbidities that are, you see, prevent any healing. You have a lack of supplies, breakdown communication between different teams. And you know, that all affects the clinical day to day. It doesn't even begin to start with the nurses ratio and everything that they're responsible for, you know, but in that academia world, yeah, you might be dealing with four case studies, but you have this, you know exactly how to fix it. You know, you can give this medication to this person, they're fixed. Okay, let's move on. Where in the real world, you're, you know, going in between rooms, dealing with three or four different, five in some patient cases, scenarios and different beliefs, cultural beliefs, all of these things that come into effect. And I think in the academic world, you don't necessarily, I think we try to do cultural competence and think about all of these things and think about comorbidities. But at the end of the day, when we're adding, like in our adult health classes or our med-surg classes, we're learning about the interventions, and they work, and that's great. But in the real world, that doesn't always happen. And, you know, there's complications from surgery, there's infection, there's all these things that we learn to look out for, but we don't necessarily see.
So, Kate, this is pretty awesome, because what I'm hearing you say is the part that is sometimes missing is the learning and context piece. Mm-hmm. So learning the nursing process with a scenario, with a situation that's two-dimensional, that's on a piece of paper, and you might throw some comorbidities in there, but and to work through that might be a very important step for a learner in an academic setting, but it is, and it is more than that, right? So yeah, to scaffold
that, you have to learn that step before you can get to the next step. But yes, we don't always get to that next step. I feel like in the academic world.
Yep.
And, you know, this learning in context just emphasizes the importance of, you know, Michelle and I, you know, are on a quest. Would you say it's a quest, Michelle? A life's work? I'm not sure. A journey. I don't know.
We could think of a whole bunch of different words. We're going to have a whole other episode on just describing what we're trying to do.
But, you know, we're trying to really start momentum, get momentum behind something that we should be doing long ago, which is getting away from these straight lectures and really embracing problem-based learning and unfolding case studies and immersive active learning strategies, because that's how learners learn in context. And, you know, Kate, I don't know how deeply entrenched you are in knowing about the next gen NCLEX format that's coming out and the clinical judgment measurement model, but Michelle and I spent a lot of time talking and thinking and wrestling with this. And, you know, part of it is that layer four, you know, layer three is the cognitive functions that they're, that the next gen's measuring. But that layer four is context. And so I think I'm so glad to hear you say this, Kate, because it emphasizes the importance for us in academia to really be thinking about and rethinking and reimagining what does delivery of content look like? And it's not really delivery of content, it's facilitation of learning and facilitation of development of clinical judgment, learning in context. And that doesn't happen with someone's clenched to a lectern at the front of the room talking for 3 hours. It doesn't happen.
We want to be conscious of our time boundaries. This conversation could go on, and it will. We will pick up with our conversation with Kate, discussing practice connections to education on our next episode. We hope you join us next time with the Nursing Edge Unscripted Surface podcast. Until then, be well.